Hi, this is the voice, Michael Schiavello. You're listening to the Premium Oddscast, hosted by leading MMA odds maker Nick Kalikas, fight scientist and author of Fightnomics, Reid Kuhn, and MMA journalist Brian Heminger. The absolute best UFC betting info, picks, statistics, and analysis from the most respected authority in mixed martial arts betting, MMAOddsBreaker.com.
Welcome to the Premium Oddscast, presented by Five Dime Sportsbook. I'm Brian Heminger, joined today by leading mixed martial arts oddsmaker Nick Kalikas to break down this Saturday's UFC Fight Night 116 event, which takes place in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. If you're unfamiliar with our format, Nick and I will break down the fight card from top to bottom, providing extensive analysis and a pick for each fight after doing our film study for the event. Looking back at our last event, we lost 1.95 units for UFC 215 after going 0-1 on our premium bets. We also won our one-unit free bet parlay of Alex White and Henry Cejudo. Back to the present, UFC Fight Night 116 features an 11-fight card in total and will be aired on UFC Fight Pass and Fox Sports 1 this Saturday night. Let's dive right in. Now, kicking things off on Fight Pass, and it's the lone Fight Pass fight, is a lightweight contest between Jason Sago, who is 12-3, and Gilbert Burns, who is 11-2. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Burns -180 to come back on Sago at +140. Right now at our sponsored sportsbook, fivedimes.eu. Currently, Five Dimes has Burns -130 to come back on Sago at +110. So early action coming in on Sago. I am a little bit surprised. I mean, I know it's going to be a competitive fight, and I expect it to be as well. Burns is just a little bit more popular as far as the betting window goes in most cases. But obviously, Burns hasn't really been performing as we all expected him to be. I mean, especially in the lightweight division, I honestly thought that he'd be a little bit more solid right now. I mean, the guy is definitely a submission whiz. I mean, if he gets a fight to the ground, in most cases, he's going to submit his opponent. So he's that special on the ground. His stand-up game's really not that bad. His wrestling game's really not that bad either, but he's a little bit too hittable for my liking on the feet. And then if you can have good submission defense, obviously Sago has that. I mean, you could probably survive Burns on the ground as well and then give him some problems. So this is not an easy fight for Burns, and I get it. I mean, Sago's getting the respect. He deserves to get some respect. I mean, he's been facing some really decent competition throughout his UFC career thus far, and Sago's been game, I mean, in all his fights. He lost a competitive decision to Khabibov. I mean, he got beat in that fight. But Khabibov outgrinds most people, so that's kind of a respectable loss. He's one of the top-tier guys in lightweight division right now, and Sago's kind of trying to climb those rankings and get up that ladder a little bit. Before that, though, he had a very competitive win over Leandro Silva, and, you know, Sago is game. Silva's not an easy opponent either, so he's been having good competitive fights, even against Paul Felder in the past, which is a great striker, as we all know, more complete than a striker, really. So he's game. I mean, he's going to bring it. He's going to show up. He's not easy to sub. So I do favor Burns still in this matchup because I think Burns is special enough on the ground that even with a guy with the ground skill of Sago, Burns can still submit somebody like that. So I wouldn't be shocked if Burns does, you know, submit, pull off a sub if this fight does take place on the ground for a decent amount of time. I think he can submit Sago. But that being said, I think it's going to be competitive. It's going to play out in all areas. I mean, the stand-up's going to be relatively close as well. So it is a dog or pass situation, especially at the opener. I do respect that action coming in, as I mentioned. But right now, I think you got to almost check out Burns at -130. And if this fight keeps on dropping or Burns becomes an underdog, then there probably is some value on Burns, and you might have to take a stab there. But I'm going to pick Burns to win this fight. I just think he edges out Sago, possibly gets a submission along the way. And I think he might be getting a tad bit disrespect in this fight right now. So the pick is Burns to win.
Basing this fight purely by skill, Gilbert Burns is the better fighter. I mean, he is a tremendously accomplished grappler, and that's where Jason Sago likes to fight. So you would think that if this fight goes to the floor, then Burns should get the better of it. The problem is that Burns has been a historic underachiever. I mean, he's just had way too many fights that should have been blowouts, or where he was favored heavily that he underperformed in. I mean, it kind of started with the Alex Oliveira fight where he lost the first two rounds. He was kind of getting beat up there and then pulled off a submission because Oliveira slowed down. And then since that fight where he kind of got exposed a little bit, he's lost 2 out of 3. He hasn't been knocked out or anything, but I mean, he's been getting beat up in fights. Especially the Magomedov fight where he really kind of got exposed. So, Burns really needs a quality win to kind of get back on track. And at 31 years old, you know, time's starting to run out for him to kind of make a run. Now, Sago is a guy that has kind of been the classic overachiever. You know, people really never expected much out of him when he first got signed to the UFC, but then he gave some really tough fights to some really good people. Paul Felder is a top lightweight. That fight went to split decision that he lost. He beat a guy like Leandro Silva by split decision. And then most recently, yeah, you know, he kind of got the brakes beat off him by Khabibov, but that's just a fight that was a really bad stylistic matchup for him. This time around, if Sago can keep it standing, then I think he might be able to outstrike Burns. Neither of them are very good strikers. Burns has a little bit more power, but Sago is a little bit more aggressive and throws with a little bit more volume, so he could sway the judges there. And you never know. If Burns starts to slow down even on the ground, maybe Sago can get something going. This guy is crafty and scrappy, and he just makes things happen. But that being said, if Gilbert Burns fights to his potential, he should win this fight. So I'm going to bet on him doing that. So I'm going to pick Gilbert Burns. But again, definitely being cautious here, because if Burns underachieves, there's going to be an opportunity here for Sago to pull off another upset. But my pick is Gilbert Burns. Now, kicking off the Fox Sports 1 preliminary card, we have a bantamweight contest between Luke Sanders, who is 11-1, and Felipe Arantes, who is 18-7-1 with 2 no contests. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up at Sanders, minus 260, the comeback on Arantes at plus 180. Right now we're at 5 dimes. Sanders, minus 220, the comeback on Arantes still plus 180. So line margins have tightened up a little bit. 2 action coming into this fight. I'm not surprised. I think that both fighters deserve respect here. They're both very talented. Arantes has been in the UFC now for a while. He's faced high-level competition. He's performed really well against most. I mean, he's been up and down at times, but I think his performances of late have been very respectable, and especially since dropping down to bantamweight. I think the guy is a very difficult out for most bantamweight fighters out there, because he does have a very complete skill set. I mean, his striking's decent. He's a little bit unorthodox, but with clean technique at times. He's got some knockout power in the feet as well. He's got some underrated wrestling. He get some takedowns, and then on the ground, I mean, his ground game has gotten really, really solid. I mean, earlier on in his career, he might have been susceptible a little bit to getting subbed, but I mean, since that time, with experience and with the fights that he's had, I think he's a very, very tough guy to submit as well. So he's a very complete fighter right now, and he's going to bring it. I mean, his conditioning at times is spotty. I think sometimes, you know, you can see Arantes, and he's fighting kind of slow in the third round, but you know, recently again, I think he's addressed that a little bit, and he's been fighting pretty strong throughout the whole entire fight. So that's what he's going to need to do here, though, against Sanders. Sanders, I think, still has an edge in this fight. Obviously, he's a favorite for a reason. I think Sanders, despite the experience Arantes has over quality competition, Sanders hasn't fought slouches throughout his career, of course, and he was looking really good in his last fight in the UFC. But unfortunately for him, he made a mistake against Alcantara. Alcantara grabbed his leg and was able to get the submission win over Sanders. Outside of that, though, Sanders was winning that fight and pretty impressively. So Sanders is one of these guys, I think, that I know at age 31, it's hard to consider him a prospect, but in fight years, at least, he's still relatively young. He's got a very complete game in his own right. I think he's going to be a little bit physically more dominant here than Arantes. He's going to have some speed. He's going to have some power. He's going to have a little bit more athleticism overall. I think he has very solid wrestling. I think overall his ground game is pretty decent as well. But I mean, again, he got caught and he got exposed a little bit on the ground against Alcantara when he made a mistake. So that worries me a little bit, because Arantes is no slouch on the ground either. And if you see a fighter lose like that, I think if you're getting involved in scrambles on the ground with a guy like Sanders, then you're going to go for that same type of submission, I think. So I know Sanders is going to be more prepared this time. I believe so, at least. I think he's going to have a better fight IQ with more experience. And I mean, again, he was on his way to victory against Alcantara in his last fight, and he just kind of gave it back. He gave it away. So he had that fight in the bag. And before that, though, I mean, we should also mention that Sanders did have a really impressive victory in his UFC debut over a guy like Maximo Blanco. I mean, Blanco's no easy out at times as well. So Sanders kind of ran through him. So Sanders has a ton of potential. He can make a run towards a bantamweight title shot potentially, especially if he's getting solid wins like this. This is a stepping stone for him here. I think he's going to pass this test. I think he can fight smarter and probably not get submitted. And I think he basically just outpoints Arantes and earns a decision win. And it should be clear enough, at least 29-28 type of decision. Maybe we see a 30-27 type of decision from Sanders. And again, That's not disrespecting Orantes, because I think he's going to bring in. He's going to be more than competitive in his fight. I just think Sanders is going to be too much for him in this spot, though, still. So my pick is Sanders. He probably wins on the scorecards.
To me, Luke Sanders is one of the better prospects in the bantamweight division. I mean, the guy has solid, above-average striking, very aggressive wrestling, excellent top control, and great ground and pound, and overall pretty good submissions. I mean, he's an extremely well-rounded fighter that can go in there and compete against the top guys in the division right now. Problem is, he made a mistake in his last fight. I mean, he was absolutely destroying Yuri Alcantara, and then he left his leg out, and Alcantara snatched it, put him in a knee bar, and tapped him out. I mean, and it was an obvious one, too. It wasn't like just... It just happened like in a fluke thing. I mean, Alcantara was pretty like telegraphing that he was going for this, and Sanders really didn't do anything to stop it. So it was just, you know, kind of a big mental gaffe in that fight, because I mean, Sanders had that fight in the bag. I mean, Alcantara doesn't have good conditioning, and he'd already destroyed him in the first round, and he kind of just let it slip. So he definitely is probably extremely motivated to come back stronger and kind of put that fight behind him. Arantes, on the other hand, you know, this is a guy that's kind of been up and down throughout the UFC featherweight and bantamweight divisions. He really hasn't been able to string much together throughout his career, and you know, never having more than, you know, one loss in a row or two wins in a row, and it's just tough to really put a lot of faith in this guy. Arantes is talented. He's a good striker. He's a good grappler. He's just not really great at anything. Like the guys that he's submitting, you know, Yves Jabwe, a veteran that's never really been that good at defending stuff on the ground. Gerard Sanders has been submitted a ton of times. So, you know, I can't put too much stock into the fact that he was able to get those finishes. But Luke Sanders, I think unless he makes another huge mistake, I don't see Arantes getting a finish. And I definitely don't see Arantes getting a decision, because Sanders is just so high tempo. I mean, this guy lands, after multiple fights in the UFC, his strikes per minute is 10 landed. That's ridiculous. He's just so aggressive and so active when he gets his takedowns. I don't see Arantes stopping the takedowns with his career 42% defense rate. And I just expect Sanders gets top position and just starts beating the tar out of Arantes over the course of three rounds. Even though Arantes is a solid veteran, this is a very winnable fight for Sanders. So I expect a kind of a one-sided thrashing here from ground and pound, until he can either get a TKO or decision, or maybe Arantes gives up a submission to just make it stop. So my pick is going to be Luke Sanders. Now, moving up to the middleweight division, we have Krzysztof Żatko, who is 19-2, taking on Uriah Hall, who is 13-8. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I open Żatko -230, the comeback on Hall at +170, right now over 5 times. Żatko -220, Hall is +180. Line margins have tightened up a little bit as well. Two-way action coming in this fight, maintaining it around 2-1 or over, and I think it'll probably be around that spot. Maybe see a little bit of a drop with Hall's popularity. I mean, believe it or not, I know he's on a 3-fight losing streak, and he's lost 2 by TKO, but that being said, I mean, typically speaking, a lot of guys do respect Hall's ability, and he's a dynamic striker, explosive. He can knock most out in the middleweight division. His wrestling's actually not too bad. I know he gets beat that way. I mean, if you can get him down to the ground and control him a little bit, then you have a path to victory for sure. But he doesn't make it that easy. I mean, his takedown defense is actually solid at times as well. So Żatko is not going to have a walk in the park getting hauled to the ground. On the feet, it's not going to be easy either. I mean, Hall, again, he's been a little bit chinny recently, though. That's what worries you. Maybe he hit that spot where at 33 years old, is in fight years, maybe he's beyond that, and we start seeing that chin get worse and worse. I'm not sure. Żatko is not really known for too much of one punch knockout power. I mean, he has it in him, of course. He's proven that before. But that being said, I mean, you shouldn't see Żatko having his way with Hall on the feet. I think it'd be very competitive on the feet, even though Żatko could edge him out. I'm not saying he's not going to win the striking battle, but that is definitely in most cases, an edge that Hall will have. So Jocko is improving. He's getting better. I mean, he's really turned himself with hard work and dedication to the sport and the confidence that he's gained fight by fight into a legit contender in middleweight. I mean, the guy's still relatively young. I mean, he's kind of going to hit his prime here soon at age, I believe he's 28 years old or so. So his athleticism in his own right is pretty solid. I mean, he's got long reach for the weight class. He's a southpaw. He's got a lot of good things going for him. He utilizes that reach decent. He's not very easy to hit either with his movement, and he can get a takedown or two when needed. So Jocko is a very complete fighter. He's only getting better, and I think that he's going to be stylistically kind of a difficult matchup for Hall because, again, the competitiveness on the feet is going to go back and forth a little bit, but I think Jocko could probably steal him around by controlling, but pinning Hall up against the cage a little bit by getting a takedown, and maybe not even if he has to maintain that takedown or so either. So he's going to have a better ground game, I think, overall. Jocko will. He has some advantages in this fight. So Hall's no joke, though. He's not going to make things easy. So I expect this to be an interesting type of fight, really. I mean, again, it could probably take place in all areas of the cage, but I think Jocko does edge him out, probably on the scorecards. But if there's a knockout here, believe it or not, I think it's Jocko. Even though he might not be the better striker overall, I think it's Jocko maybe checking that chin of Hall and putting him out. So if it's inside the distance, I'd favor Jocko. If it's a scorecards right now, I favor Jocko as well. So I think 2-1 is a fair line, but again, Hall's going to be game, and it's kind of tough to bet that line at 2-1 where it is right now. So the pick is Jocko. But I'm hoping that Hall shows up and we see a little bit of what he did have before this little three-fight losing streak. I mean, he was a talented fighter and kind of making a little climb towards the top. So I hope he gets back on track and at least is competitive in this fight.
On paper, I mean, Jocko has just had way more success in the middleweight division than Uriah Hall. Yeah, Hall has pulled off the occasional shocking victory, but Jocko has just been so much more consistent in the middleweight division. I mean, he had a really nice streak that was stopped by Dave Branch in a very close fight that arguably could have gone the other way. And then Uriah Hall is currently on a three-fight losing streak. So you would think that, you know, this is just a Jocko bounce-back fight. But stylistically, Hall does have a ways to win this fight. I mean, he's the more dynamic striker of the two. He's got more pure punching and kicking power. And Hall kind of is the, you know, the quicker, more athletic fighter of the two. That being said, Jocko is more well-rounded. Jocko, I think, is more capable of doing damage in the clinch area. If he can get the fight to the floor, Jocko should have an advantage. And Jocko, I think, is the better conditioned fighter and has the better chin. So if these guys are landing strikes, even though Hall hits harder, Jocko can kind of absorb it. And Hall can't. I mean, Hall is now coming off of two stoppage losses from TKO, so I am starting to get a little bit concerned. I mean, granted, they were against top UFC middleweights. I mean, his last three fights were all against basically top 10 UFC middleweights. Now, Mustafa is no longer in the UFC, but I mean, was a top five guy. So it's not like Hall was losing to scrubs. And Jocko, yeah, he had some quality wins over guys like, Talis Latis and among others. But so, yeah, this is a tricky fight because, yeah, even though Jocko has been the more consistent fighter, he hasn't faced fighters nearly as tough as Uriah Hall. So it's kind of tough to have a lot of faith. Even though Hall's on that losing streak, you kind of got to pay attention to who they're fighting. So, realistically, if this fight stays standing, Uriah Hall should have a really good shot. I mean, Jocko has good, crisp, technical boxing, but Hall is flashy and powerful and can mix it up, and he can make things happen. So, unless Jocko really switches up his game plan a little bit and maybe kind of does not allow this fight to take place in the phone booth or in striking range, then I think Uriah Hall has a really good chance of pulling this one out. So believe it or not, I'm actually going to side with Uriah Hall. So Hall's going to be my pick. I think that he can either win a decision by outstriking Jocko over the course of three rounds, or he might even just knock Jocko out. So Uriah Hall is my pick. Now moving up to the heavyweight division, we have Anthony Hamilton, who is 15-7, taking on Daniel Spitz, who is 5-1. Now, Nick, What's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Hamilton, minus 230. The comeback on Spitz at plus 170 right now over five times. We are looking at Hamilton minus 210, the comeback on Spitz at plus 175. So line margins have tightened up a little bit. A lot of people are probably afraid to touch this fight or staying away from it. I don't blame you at all. This is a crazy one as far as the betting window goes. Because you would think, I mean, in most cases, Hamilton's chin is so bad that a lot of heavyweights, legit heavyweights, especially with the size of Spitz, can make life miserable for Hamilton once again. But outside of that, if you really look at skill set for skill set, Hamilton's actually the better fighter. He's the better athlete. I think he has the better wrestling. I think he's actually got the better hands at times as well. I think Spitz mixes up his striking a little bit better overall. He needs to find a little bit more power, especially for the heavyweight division. But I think he has some tools with his, you know, with his length, and his clinch game's not bad at times either, but he needs to be more aggressive. His conditioning didn't look up to par in his UFC debut. And Hamilton has probably a better gas tank as well. So the arrows are pointing at Hamilton for the win, but the problem here is, again, you can't really trust that chin. I mean, Hamilton's been knocked out time and time again. That's how he loses most of his fights in the UFC. So even though Spitz is not really known for that one-punch knockout power, I mean, I really don't trust Hamilton's chin. So I'm going to pick Hamilton to win his fight. I think he basically – it comes down to him not getting knocked out, and he probably grinds Spitz out or even maybe finishes him along the way. I think it's pretty clear. But if he does get caught, obviously he's going to lose a fight. So my pick is Hamilton. As far as a bet goes, it's kind of tough to touch his fight. I would probably stay away as well.
Yeah, this is one where – both of these guys are pretty low-tier UFC heavyweights, but at least Hamilton has some experience in the division. Although that doesn't say much, because when Hamilton steps up his game and takes on anybody that's half-decent, he usually doesn't just lose, he gets destroyed. You know, his last fight, Hamilton welcomed a newcomer to the UFC, a guy in Marcel Fortuna that was a light heavyweight, basically, who had never knocked anybody out and was more of a submission fighter. And Fortuna knocked him out in the first round. So, I mean, that's just wild. And overall, Hamilton has been finished in the first round now four times out of his fights in the UFC. And he's fought, this is his ninth fight coming up. So, 3-5 with four first round losses. So that's something to consider. Now, Daniel Spitz isn't a world beater. He has good size for the division. I mean, he's 6'7", has a great wingspan. He's just green right now. I mean, he's long and lanky and has a decent jab, but he doesn't really have a lot more behind that right now at this point. I mean, in his UFC debut against Godbeer, I mean, he was throwing out the jab. He was landing a couple good strikes, but his striking defense was porous. His conditioning was lackluster, and he was preparing for a fight, so it's not like this was just, even though he was a short-notice replacement, I mean, he had just gone through a training camp, so he should have been fine conditioning-wise, so maybe that's just his conditioning. And he just didn't show much. I mean, he's not very active on the feet, even though he does have that length, and he doesn't look like he has a ton of power. So against legitimate heavyweights, I think he's going to have some trouble, so... unless Anthony Hamilton just walks right into one, and that's possible. I mean, he's had that button pushed three times, I think, inside the octagon so far. And Spitz could do it, even though he doesn't seem like the biggest prospect. It doesn't take much to beat Hamilton at this point. But that being said, Spitz didn't look like much in his UFC debut either, so I'm going to side with Hamilton. I think he can either just push Spitz around a little bit with his size and strength, or he could get takedowns and beat Spitz up on the canvas. Spitz did go for some takedowns in his UFC debut, but I mean, if you can't take down Mark Godbeer, who can you take down? So I'm not very confident in his ground game either. And that's kind of what really gassed him out. So if he really wants to go to the ground, then he's going to get tired really quick. So I'm going to side with Anthony Hamilton, but I can't really trust him because it doesn't take much to put him out. And Spitz, with his length, could land something that he doesn't see coming. So I'm going to side with Hamilton, but exercising caution here, guys. Now, moving on to the preliminary card headliner, we have a lightweight contest between Tony Martin, who is 12-3, and Olivier Aubin-Mercier, who is 10-2. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I've been Aubin Mercier -175, the comeback on Martin at +135. Early action coming in on Martin. It dropped the line right now. It's over five dimes. It's Aubin Mercier -120. The comeback on Martin is even money. So dog action coming in on Martin. Martin even tweeted out after we opened the line at MMA Oddsbreaker, no respect. And it seems like the bettors out there agreed with him. And you know what? You got to give the guy respect. In fact, I have. I mean, there's been many times that I've bet the guy. There's been many times that I picked the guy. I know what kind of skill set he has. It's just frustrating at times to see him with some of the issues that he has. I mean, he has all the talent in the world. He's got the wrestling. He's got the length in the division. He's got the strength. He's got the athleticism as well. He's got a good offensive jiu-jitsu game. It's just his conditioning in the past let him down. I mean, in his last fight, though, I got to say, and I know that he's talked about addressing some of the issues that he had, his health concerns that are, you know, some of the medical problems that he once had, he's addressed and he's looked better. I mean, if you look at his fight against Alex White, that was no easy fight, even though White did move up to lightweight. Obviously, with White's recent win, we all know that he's a legit white lightweight as well. I mean, the guy has power in the feet. He's no joke. He's no slouch. He has some solid wrestling. Martin was able to get a very impressive win over White, and he took some punishment there, and he was able to go that three rounds strong. His last win over Case, same type of thing. Very solid win over a very solid fighter in Case. He went three rounds, got the W. So he's showing improvements in the conditioning area where I think he needs to, and that's what's hurt him in the past, and it's led to some of his losses before as well. So his submission defense, to me, it's still a little suspect. And again, I know that that was part of the gas tank that kind of went along with that. But that being said, I think that's where he needs us to be cautious in this fight. It's his submission defense. He needs his fight IQ has to be up to par, because if he lets a limb out there, Aubin Mercier on the ground will take it and he will submit Martin. Or if he, you know, not cautious and lets Aubin Mercier take his back, I think Martin can lose a fight that way as well. But if he does not get finished, I think if he hits the scorecards, we're going to see a very competitive back and forth type of battle. So I do respect Martin. I know he has the tools to win this fight, and I understand the early action coming in his way, but Aubin Mercier, we could say a lot of the same things about him, meaning that he's improved quite a bit recently as well. And he needed to, because he was flawed as well. I mean, he's a great grappler, good ground fighter, but as proven in the past, I mean, if you're able to fend him off on the ground a little bit, keep the fight on the feet, maybe get top position on the ground, you're able to beat him. I mean, he needed to develop that stand-up game and become a little bit more effective with his striking to kind of blend in well with his submission game and his ground game as well. And I think he's starting to do that. I mean, in his last fight against Dober, he was more than impressive. I mean, Dober, his striking, I know he's hittable at times, but his striking's not a joke, really. I mean, he's got some power on the feet. He can do some damage on the feet as well. And Aubin Mercier was having success against Dober on the feet, and then before he even submitted him. So, I mean, that's a solid win for him. Before that, Gowdy, he was able to, again, submit Tybo Goldie on the ground as well. So he's had some solid wins. And, you know, especially rebounding from his loss to Carlos Diego Ferreira, I think that that was definitely kind of a head scratcher in most people's minds as well, because he was a solid favorite going into that fight. So I think he's rebounded nicely after that loss. I think he addressed some of the issues that he had, and I think he's a better version of himself. I mean, if he continues to improve his stand-up game, then, I mean, he's going to be a threat again at 155, which most of us thought. So this is going to be a tough fight for both guys. I think it'll be back and forth. I think both guys can get top position on the ground. I think both guys can utilize their stand-up game and have success against each other as well. So, I mean, where the line is right now, I do understand it. I think it is kind of a pick-em fight, but I do still lean a little bit more towards Aubin Mercier, because I think he's a little bit more complete still on the ground, meaning that his sub-defense is a little bit better. And if maybe Martin takes his back, I think Mercier can survive it. Whereas if Aubin Mercier takes Martin's back, I'm not so sure. That type of submission defense I'm referring to. So, competitive battle, tough one to really call, but I lean a little bit more towards Aubin Mercier, so I'll go against the public grain and pick Mercier to get the W.
And I think I'll come in the other way. Tony Martin had really bad conditioning issues early in his career, and they were throwing him into the ringer against some very tough fighters, and he was faring well early, and then he would gas, and then he would lose. But now it seems like he's put those conditioning issues behind him. He's kind of figured out what was the cause and he's fixed it. And he's been very effective so far in the UFC lightweight division. He's been pulling off some impressive performances. Most recently, the victories over, Felipe Olivieri, and then his decision wins, which is shocking to me. The fact that Tony Martin could win decisions, when he started out his UFC career gassing horribly, but now he's able to win decisions against good fighters in Alex White and Johnny Case. So I'm impressed with the kind of improvements that Tony Martin has shown. Now, that being said, Aubin Mercier has shown excellent improvements as well. I mean, this guy was a very good grappler with a solid submission game, and now he's added striking to his game. I mean, his last fight, he outstruck Drew Dober on the feet before eventually getting a submission victory. So I was super impressed with the developments in Aubin Mercier's striking. So when these guys square off, even though they're more known for having their ground, I'm very interested to see what happens on the feet. Martin has had a very quick and nasty jab that he showcased in his last couple fights from his work with Mark Delagrati. And Mercier, I think, is a little bit more of an active striker, a more athletic striker, relying a little bit more on movement. So these guys are both very talented and they're well-rounded now. So if this fight goes to the ground, I think Mercier is the better wrestler, but Martin is an extremely good grappler with, and he's physically strong, and he might be able to overpower Mercier a little bit. On the feet, Martin's a little longer, so if he can use that jab, that could be very effective for him. It might be able to stifle whatever Mercier's trying to do on the feet. And if it goes to the floor, I think Mercier might get top position, but Martin is very good at getting back to his feet when he's conditioned. And he's very, very sneaky about going for limbs. I mean, this guy gets Kimuras, arm bars, you name it, he's going for it. So Mercier's better be very careful on the ground, because he has had fights where he did get controlled on the ground. You got to remember, it wasn't that long ago that Carlos Diego Ferreira was able to get on top of him on the ground and just kind of pass his guard and just beat him over the course of three rounds. So it would not shock me to see Tony Martin out-grapple Mercier, especially with all the kind of time that Mercier has been putting into his striking game. So I'm going to side with Tony Martin. I think that he gets the jab going on the feet, and I think that he at least holds his own on the ground with Mercier, if not gets the better of him there. So my pick is going to be Tony Martin. Now moving on to the Fox Sports 1 main card, we have a heavyweight contest between Justin Ledet, who is 8-0 with 1-0 contest, and he's taking on UFC newcomer Zhu Anyanwu, who is 14-4. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I open Ledet -315, the comeback on Anyanwu at +235, right now over five times. It is Ledet -390. The comeback on Anyanwu is currently +320. So early action coming in on the favorite, Ledet. I understand it. I mean, Anyanwu is taking this fight on relatively short notice. We all know that. So his gas tank is going to be in a question. He is a veteran of the Dana White Tuesday Night Contender Series, though. He had an impressive win on that show over Greg Rubello. So he's a knockout artist. That's exactly what he does. So maybe the gas tank isn't going to be an issue for him right here, because if he wins this fight, I think more than likely it's probably going to be by KO. So he has a ton of power. He has athleticism to go along with it, and he's got solid experience. So I think Anyanwu is definitely a good addition to the UFC roster, especially how, you know, it's kind of watered down. I mean, the heavyweight division is still one of the weaker divisions. I mean, especially if you go towards the middle of the division and the lower part of the division, it's definitely weak enough that this guy could come in right away outside of this fight, because I don't think he's going to be Ledet here, but he can come in to the UFC heavyweight division and probably pull off some victories and knock out a couple chinny guys that they have on roster. So I think Anyanwu is a good addition to the roster. Again, he picked up an impressive win on Tuesday night from Dana White's show. But here he's stepping up in a tougher competition level. I mean, Ledet is one of these guys. He's still relatively young as far as MMA years goes. He's kind of entering the prime of his career right now as well. He's getting more experience. He's got a boxing background. He's got some length for the division as well. He's already proven that he belongs in the UFC coming off of a few impressive victories. I think he's getting better. He's getting more confident fight by fight as well. He's starting to show off a little bit of a ground game, where most of us know him more so for his boxing and his striking game as well. So I think it's going to be really tough for Anyanwu to kind of land that knockout punch against Ledet. I mean, it's possible, again, because in the heavyweight division especially, I mean, all it takes is one clean shot to land and these guys can go out. But I think Ledet's defense overall is going to be solid enough that he starts to pick on Anyanwu apart as the fight progresses a little bit. And if Anyanwu starts gassing, then Ledet's probably going to fish things off. If it hits the scorecards, which I doubt it will go that long, but I think Ledet ends up winning if it does go to the cards as well. So Ledet that just stylistically is a bad matchup for him, especially coming in on short notice. It makes it that much tougher, I think. And Ledet's a really solid prospect, you know, in the heavyweight division. Like I said, I think he's going to come into his prime here. He's only getting more confident fight by fight, and he'll get another impressive win over Ngannou in this spot here. So the pick is Ledet and probably inside the distance.
I think this fight's pretty straightforward. Ngannou is stepping in on short notice, and while he's not exactly the best heavyweight, I mean, this is a guy that has a lot of power, and he swings with, you know, nasty intentions. So if he connects against people, he's probably going to knock him out. That's just the way this guy fights. He's not much for getting big takedowns against most fighters. He doesn't have much of a ground game. It's just more about wading forward, landing bombs. That being said, I think this is a horrific stylistic matchup for him. Justin Ledet is one of the better prospects in the UFC heavyweight division. He has excellent boxing, an improving ground game, and, he has great use of distance, jab, solid striking fundamentals. He's going to see Ngannou's haymakers coming a mile away, and he's going to be able to get out of the way of them. So, Ledet, I just see him picking apart Ngannou on the feet and then eventually either knocking him out, or he might just coast to a decision if he feels that that's the safest route to victory. I really, barring just some crazy haymaker that somehow gets, that Ledet doesn't see coming, connecting, I don't see how Ngannou can win this fight. I think this is an extremely one-sided matchup, and Ledet gets back in the top 15 for the UFC heavyweight division after, I think, having a drug suspension. So it'll be nice to see Ledet back, and hopefully he makes potentially a run towards the top of the heavyweight division, because it is a very shallow weight class right now, and they can use anything they can get. So my pick is going to be Justin Ledet, and I think he wins very easily. Now, dropping down to the welterweight division, we have Kamaru Usman, who is 10-1, taking on Sergio Moraes, who is 12-3-1. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Usman -400, the comeback on Moraes at +280. Decent price tag against a very solid fighter like Moraes. It wasn't enough. Right now, over five times, Usman's -700. The comeback on Moraes is +500. So some straight action coming in early on Usman, but also a lot of parlay action getting bet his way as well. Not really that surprised by it. But again, Moraes is a pretty solid fighter in his own right, especially on the ground. I mean, if you look at his resume and who he's been in there with so far in the UFC, it's been pretty impressive. I mean, you can't take it away from Moraes. I mean, of course, he's known again for his ground fighting. He's a submission whiz. I mean, he's elite on the ground, and that's how he gets most of his victories. But that being said, he's starting another one of these guys that's a grappler that's starting to pick up the striking game a little bit more, be a little bit more effective with the striking. He's getting better. He just has to be careful here, because Usman is another guy known more so for, I think, his strength and his wrestling and his dominance on the ground, but he can strike too. He's showing us that he can stand and bang, and he's got more knockout power than Moraes here in this spot. And really, he's going to probably want to do, you know, the old Chuck Liddell game plan, where you're going to sprawl, brawl, probably knock Moraes out on the feet here, because you don't want to really tangle, even though you can do it. And he has a good ground game, and he hasn't been – well, he's been submitted once in his career, but he hasn't been subbed too often. You don't want to play that game. Why even mess around with your opponent's strength, and that's on the ground for Moraes? So I think what's going to happen here is what most of you obviously do as well. Usman's going to be able to keep this fight upright. If he doesn't knock Moraes out, he's going to probably be able to win on the scorecards as well. So it's Usman's fight to win or lose here. I mean, he does have a clear edge. I open him a solid favorite. The betting action supporting that as well, and it's been bet up even more so. So it would be a pretty decent size upset if he loses here against Moraes, even though Moraes is a quality competitor, and I think he can continue to win a lot of fights in the welterweight division. So this is going to be an impressive win for Usman, and so I'm going to pick him to win.
Overall, Usman is just one of the more exciting prospects in the UFC welterweight division. I mean, this guy has elite wrestling. He is one of the top athletes at welterweight, and his striking is coming a long way. So you look at how he matches up against Moraes. Usman's the better striker. He's more athletic. He's healthier. Moraes has had a long history of knee issues, and that's kind of made it really difficult for him to force fights to the floor. And then Usman is the better wrestler by a significant margin. Now, Moraes is the better grappler in terms of submissions, but if Usman plays it smart here, this fight never goes to the ground. Or if he's extremely confident in his ability to get takedowns and keep Moraes on his back, then he could just do that. But, I mean, why risk playing with fire? Usman has kind of kept fights on their feet for the most part in a couple of his more recent bouts. He basically kind of showcased what he was capable of in the bout against Warley Alves when, for the last like two rounds, he just stood with Alves and beat him up a little bit. He didn't get the knockout or anything, but he definitely made a statement in that fight. And he's faced some pretty good fighters overall during this run. I mean, Leon Edwards was a really quality win and he just took him down six times and passed his guard and just beat him up. Same thing. I mean, he faced Alexander Yakovlev, a good fighter, took him down five times and beat him up. So, that's just what Usman's game is. And he's the type of fighter that now that he's adding some striking to his game, he's going to be able to beat fighters at their weakest point because he's the one that dictates where the fight goes. So, Sergio Moraes, as great as he is with his submission game, if Usman doesn't want it to go to the ground, it's not going to the ground. So I have to side with Usman here. I think he's the more athletic fighter. He's going to be able to get in and out and land some good strikes on the feet. And then, Moraes basically has a submitter's chance, not a puncher's chance. Even though he does have a little bit of power, I don't see him being the guy that knocks out Usman. I think Usman is a guy that could be a title contender within another year. I think there's that much potential with him. So my pick is going to be Usman. I think he gets a quality victory here and puts himself into the top 10 in the UFC's welterweight division. Now dropping down to the lightweight division, we have Gregor Gillespie, who is 9-0, taking on Jason Gonzalez, who is 11-3. Now, Nick, what's the MMA odds makers perspective on this one?
Up in Gillespie -565, the comeback on Gonzalez at +375. Early action coming in on the dog. Right now it's Gillespie -430 at 5 times, the comeback on Gonzalez at +345. So prefer to get the action that way. I wasn't going to let all you guys come in on this fight with all the hype and the ability and everything that we see as far as true prospects go. I mean, Gillespie is just that. I know, again, 31 years old, so he's not the youngest prospect out there, but I mean, the hype and the ability and his wrestling background and what he's displayed so far in the UFC, the guy is definitely a threat to make a run towards a title, especially if he continues to improve and get experience. So again, I knew people wanted to probably tee off on this as far as parlay material goes. So I did open it a little bit higher, than I should. And I'm saying that because Gonzalez is a threat. I mean, he's definitely a threat in the lightweight division. In fact, I mean, I know he suffered a few losses and it's disappointing in a way because I think with Gonzalez's frame, I mean, his length and his power and his ability, to finish fights, the guy is a serious threat to most people. I just think here, stylistically, it's kind of a tough matchup because again, Gonzalez's kryptonite or some of his flaws have been that chin. I mean, the chin's let him down. Gillespie's starting to show some really decent boxing. He's got some power on his feet. Gonzalez's other weakness has been at times getting put on his back and getting, you know, letting people control him on the ground as well. So that's another area that Gillespie can obviously go to work on here if he wants to. So this is stylistically just a tough matchup. I mean, Gonzalez is going to – I know Brian last fight, he was saying basically gave Moraes a submission guy's chance to win that fight. Here it is a puncher's chance. I think Gonzalez more than likely has a puncher's chance, even though you can't count out a submission game. I mean, he could catch a choke or an arm or something along the way. I doubt it. I think if he ends up winning this fight, it's going to be because he lands a flush knee or, you know, a strike on the feet is probably going to win it for him. So outside of that, I don't think he's probably going to win this fight. I think Gillespie's just going to be too much. I think he can outbox him on the feet. I think he can get the takedowns when needed, and I think he can grind him out and possibly finish him along the way. So Gillespie, I mean, from what we've seen so far, I know he's a little raw, but he's improving fast. And at the pace that he's improving, I mean, again, I'm nothing but impressed by him. So I think he's going to win this fight, probably does so in highlight reel fashion, and then he continues his climb towards, again, maybe someday being considered a title contender in the lightweight division. So really impressed with Gillespie, and he has a tough guy on his hands here in Gonzalez, but I think he's going to come away with a win here.
I feel like this is, again, one of the more one-sided fights on the card. Now, Jason Gonzalez, he's 1-1 in the UFC, but he's shown some flashes of potential back when he was competing in the Ultimate Fighter. I mean, the guy has a lot of power on the feet. And then in his last fight, he showcased a decent ground game as well. So it's not like he's not capable of doing something impressive here. It's just more that Gregor Gillespie looks like an absolute monster. Gillespie showcased good power and activity on the feet in his last fight where he just massacred Andrew Holbrook. And then he's always had excellent elite-level wrestling. I mean, he's another one of those wrestlers that transitioned to MMA out of Edinburgh College. I mean, we've had a long history of really good Edinburgh MMA fighters. And I think Gillespie could be one of the next big things out of that college system. Now, Gillespie should have a huge wrestling edge against Jason Gonzalez. So if he wants to take this fight to the floor and then beat Gonzalez up, then he should probably be able to do it. On the feet, I would say Gonzalez has a little bit more pure punching power, but Gillespie is more active, and Gillespie has probably the better chin. I mean, we saw Gonzalez get knocked out pretty quickly by Drew Dober in his fight. Granted, he ate a low blow before that, and that might have, and he probably came back into the fight too soon before that wore off. But that being said, he got legitimately knocked out by Dober, and Gillespie, I think, has more power than Drew Dober. So, that could be a bit scary on the feet as well. So I like Gillespie. I think he is a tremendous athlete. He has a ton of confidence right now. He's riding high, and they put him on the main card for a reason. This isn't a showcase fight for Jason Gonzalez. They want Gregor Gillespie to probably win and win impressively, especially with Edinburgh being based out of Pennsylvania. Come on, you're seeing where this is going. I think they want to make a rising contender out of Gillespie with this fight, and they probably will. Gillespie is just too talented and has too many really good strengths in this fight, I think, to lose. So I'm going to side with Gillespie. I think he probably wins by TKO at some point. So my pick is going to be Gillespie. Now moving up to the middleweight division, we have Hector Lombard, who is 34-7-1 with two no contests, taking on Anthony Smith, who is 27-12. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in Lombard -160, the comeback on Smith at +120. Early action coming in on Smith. It actually flipped the line for a while. Smith was a slight favorite. And now it's back to Lombard actually -110. So exactly a pick'em fight. So action coming back in towards Lombard. We're getting two-way action in this fight, and we're going to probably continue to do so. So seems like pick's about a fair spot for the line to be. I mean, a couple years ago, this would be a crazy line in Lombard's favor. So it's amazing how fast, you know, things change and how Father Time catches up to good fighters. And that's exactly what's going on, I think, with Lombard here. Of course, people are saying it can say USADA and all sorts of other stuff too, and we don't really truly know, but he's definitely not the same fighter he was a couple years back. But that being said, he's still a dangerous fighter. I mean, he really has a ton of knockout power on the feet. He's got the judo background with his wrestling. I mean, he could really floor you at any time as well, put you on the ground. He's hard to take down. The problem with Lombard recently has been his cardio, his conditioning, his striking defense. Of course, he's been clipped as well. So his chin is starting to look a little suspect after he's had a pretty granite chin throughout his career. But in the UFC so far, he just looks like a different fighter. So if Lombard does fade and his conditioning does not stay up to par, then Smith probably takes over. And that's one thing I used to say about Smith. This is the funny thing here. In my opinion, Smith, before his recent run in the UFC, I mean, that was one issue with him as well. He would start off, he'd be a front runner in the first round, look strong, and then in round two, round three, have his problems and oftentimes get beat that way. So Smith has addressed that. I mean, he's looking a lot better. He's showing a better chin. He's showing better conditioning. And right now he's got some size and it's just physical abilities over Lombard. And a declining Lombard, Smith might be able to pull off the win here. So this is a tough fight for both guys. It's definitely a good test. I know Smith has looked a little bit better of the two. So again, I understand the early action coming in his way, especially at the underdog price, but I'm going to still keep the faith in Lombard a little bit because I think stylistically, again, it's a fight that he can win because he could get some top position against Smith, and I think he could possibly even knock Smith out if he does catch that chin. With all the improvements and, you know, the steadiness that Smith has shown recently, I still think that Lombard, if he shows any flashes of his old self, he can probably put Smith away or beat him in that case. So it's hard for me to pick against Lombard right now. Even though I'm not confident that he wins this fight, I still have to go with him because I think he still is – the more explosive and dynamic fighter at times. And I think he's going to probably show back up here and get the W over Smith. So interesting fight, but I'm picking Lombard to get the W.
A few years ago, if this fight took place, I mean, Lombard would have been a ridiculous favorite, but that's not the case anymore. Lombard, you know, had that failed first run at middleweight, dropped down to welterweight. Things were going good for him for a little bit. Then he missed a lot of time. Things didn't go well for him again. And he went back up to middleweight. And guess what? He still is not fighting that well. You know, this has just been, a massively disappointing run for Hector Lombard. I mean, his last four fights now have no victories combined, including a 3-fight losing streak. I mean, he even lost to Johnny Hendricks, at middleweight in his last fight. And, you know, we all saw how bad Hendricks looked in his last fight. So, you know, it's just been super frustrating to follow if you're a fan of Hector Lombard, because this is a guy that at his peak, I mean, he was destroying people. I mean, he even beat Jake Shields, not, you know, in 2014, he outgrappled great Jake Shields in a fight. So, you know, this guy is capable of doing great things. We just don't see it enough. Now, Lombard against Anthony Smith. Smith is actually, you know, with momentum, he is fighting the best he's ever fought in his career, and Lombard's fighting the worst he's ever fought in his career. So I think you have to side with Anthony Smith overall. Smith has showcased massively improved striking. His conditioning has been a huge part of this because he's been able to just hold his own in the striking against guys. And then when they start to fade, he just turns it on a notch. You know, Andrew Sanchez was getting things going pretty well against Smith. He was getting takedowns. He was getting ground and pound. But then the second Sanchez started to slow down in their last fight, Smith turned it up and ended up getting a third round TKO. Same thing against Elbis Mutapsic. Mutapsic came out really hard out of the gate, started to fade, and then Smith just started connecting hard in the second round, got a TKO. So I've been extremely impressed with what Smith's been doing lately. And with the way Hector Lombard fights, Lombard either gets that quick first round finish or he decides to conserve his energy. And when he does that, he usually ends up losing a lackluster decision. And then there's also the third case where Lombard goes for the finish early, doesn't get it, and then he gets finished. That's what happened against Dan Henderson. I mean, he had Henderson in some trouble. He hurt him, couldn't finish him. And then, Henderson ended up landing that beautiful elbow and putting him away. So, in this fight, I think Lombard, the only way he can win is if he just blitzes Smith early and tries to take him out, because Smith can be a bit of a slow starter. But if that doesn't work, or if he doesn't do that, I don't know how he wins. Lombard is very undersized in the middleweight division. Smith is one of the biggest middleweights. I mean, he's even considering moving up to light heavyweight right now. Smith has a 6-inch reach advantage. He's 7 inches taller. His legs are 6 inches longer. So, I mean, he can really do some damage if he can keep this fight at distance. And Smith is developing his striking to the point where he can keep this fight at distance and do some damage. So I'm going to side with Anthony Smith. I think that he either wins a decision by playing it smart and fighting long, or he might just knock out Hector Lombard when Lombard slows down. So I think Smith has a very good shot to win, so I'm going to pick him. Now, this next fight is interesting because Thiago Alves just dropped out of the co-main event against Mike Perry, and stepping in for Alves is Alex Reyes, a lightweight. So there's not a lot of information out there yet. We haven't been able to do our video research, but Reyes is on a 12-fight winning streak, all stoppages. His four most recent wins are submissions, and 8 knockout wins were the ones before that. So that's what I know about Reyes. And he, just in general, he seems like a guy that's on a nice run, but he doesn't have any really quality victories. So I'm going to side with Mike Perry just because he's in the UFC and he's a welterweight, and Reyes seems like, you know, he's a lightweight taking a fight on super short notice. But do you have any thoughts on this fight, Nick, before we move on to the main event?
No, just quickly looking through Reyes's resume. I mean, again, I'll have to do some research before I open the line, so I'm not going to quote anything right now. But it looks like he is going to be a tough opponent, and it looks like a lot of people have been backing out fights with him recently as well. So he's one of those guys that's been around the scene for a little while, fighting, I mean, primarily in King of the Cage, but getting some decent fights along the way, but finishing people, and a lot of people just probably don't want to risk getting an L put on the record at this point by him. So I think a lot of people, it looks like they're trying to avoid him. And I think that he is, like you said, a finisher, even though some of that competition level has been pretty low and he's stepping up on short notice against Mike Perry. I think Perry's going to have a fight on his hands, no doubt. I think that Reyes is probably going to show up pretty well despite being short notice. So we'll see. Again, I'll have to do due diligence and dig in a little bit deeper here. Perry is definitely, like I said, a tough out, especially right now. He has that UFC experience. He has that confidence, getting some solid wins under his resume. So he's going to obviously open a solid favorite. I'm sure most people are going to still pick Perry, as I'm sure Brian and I will be. That being said, make sure you guys check out MMAOddsBreaker.com for our staff picks, which is usually posted day of the fights. So that's where we're going to have our official pick for even this Perry and Reyes fight here. But that being said, I'm probably going to end up picking Perry in this spot, but I'm looking forward to this fight now. I think that, again, Alex Reyes, from what I've briefly seen, I think he's going to be game and he's going to show up and he's going to be kind of a threat to Perry.
All right. Thanks, Nick. Now, this brings us to the main event of the evening. In the middleweight division, we have former champion Luke Rockhold, who is 15-3, taking on former two-divisional World Series of Fighting champion David Branch, who is 21-3. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Rockhold -400, the comeback on Branch at +280. And right now, looking over at Five Dimes, it is Rockhold -460, the comeback on Branch at +365. So some two-way action has come in on this fight. It's been dropping back and forth a little bit. Now, as we get closer to fight time, more people are coming in with parlays, and Rockhold's starting to climb as far as line goes. I mean, skill set for skill set, Rockhold is, in my opinion, probably the best middleweight on the UFC roster, maybe in the entire world. Obviously, middleweight is, or UFC dominates, I mean, most areas. So if he's the best middleweight in the UFC, he's probably the best middleweight in the world. That kind of skill, that kind of potential. Just unfortunately for him, you know, he suffered a setback, and that big setback was that loss to Bisping. I mean, that was kind of a head scratcher. None of us really saw that coming. A lot of the diehards out there, especially how easy Rockhold was able to defeat Bisping the first time around. So we're not sure where he is right now, mentally, where he's physically. I know he's been, you know, he took some time off after the Bisping fight. He's had some modeling, some other stuff going on in his life, his personal life, some dating, some, I don't know, all sorts of stuff, and you know, that he's had some time off with, and he had to recover through, I think he had a skin condition there for a minute too. So it hasn't been exactly the smoothest couple of years, even since that loss, I think, for against Bisping for Rockhold, but it seems like he is refocused. He's been training with Henry Hooft and crew. He also obviously trains with AKA. That's, you know, that's his primary camp. So he's been working the pads a little bit and getting some pointers from Hooft, which is going to actually benefit him as well. I mean, because obviously most of you guys know Henry Hooft is an outstanding striking coach. So I think that'll benefit Rockhold. And I think he's going to come in here looking to do what he does best, and that's probably either finish the fight or dominate a very solid opponent. He has that in him. But my question mark is, I mean, that chin of Rockhold's right now, and again, with, you know, his stuff, his personal life and the stuff going on outside of the cage, how focused is he? How is his conditioning going to be? Because even in that Weidman fight, I mean, he was looking good. It was a very competitive fight back and forth, but I know he was able to outlast Weidman, and it looked like he had more gas in the tank left, but he was starting to fade, and he even admitted that. I mean, he started to get really tired in that fight. So that was a grueling fight. So I understand that, but, and he's been five rounds in the past, and Rockhold's been no problem. He's been fine doing so. But at this point right now, again, he's 32 years old. He's not getting any younger. He's had some time off, and all the question marks I have surrounding, you know, himself right now, it's just tough. Tough to be very confident in picking Rockhold. I mean, as far as betting goes, especially at the betting window, at laying 4.5 to 1, that kind of chalk, I would recommend probably staying away. Seeing how Rockhold looks in his comeback fight here against a very, very underrated Branch. I mean, David Branch, he was World Series of Fighting a champion for a reason. I mean, two-division champion for a reason. He's got skill. I know the level of competition obviously isn't what the UFC is, and he got cut from the UFC, went out there, now he's back. But he's back for a reason. I mean, he's beat some solid level competition outside of the UFC. The guy has – he's – right now, the all-time confidence level for him has got to be sky high, because he's gaining the championship wins that he had, or that kind of champion's attitude from his experience with World Series of Fighting – carried over to the UFC. He's got that kind of confidence, and now he's getting some victories in the UFC as well. And his win over Jocko, as we said, was climbing that middleweight ladder. Very impressive win. So I think Branch here, He knows that he has a great opportunity in front of him, and I think he's going to come try to exploit Rockhold's chin if it is kind of questionable. I think he's going to try to do some damage on the feet along the way here. He's going to try to have to keep it upright, though, as well, because Rockhold, again, I think even though both these guys have ground games, I think Rockhold just kind of trumps him in every area, minus toughness and minus chin right now, I think. Again, hopefully Rockhold answers those concerns here in this fight, looks impressive, and gets back on track, because I think he is probably skill set for skill set the best middleweight in the world right now, and I would like to see him competing at the top of his game and be as solid as he can be. So my pick is going to be Rockhold to win, but again, at the betting window, I would recommend probably avoiding this fight. It's either Branch or pass here. So, I mean, that's realistically what it is, even though I think Rockhold is a level above Branch overall. So pick is Rockhold to win, but we'll see how he ends up looking on fight night.
Overall, skill for skill, I mean, you got to favor Luke Rockhold. Yeah, the guy has a active life outside the UFC, but, I mean, he is one of the most talented middleweights in the world. He has good power on the feet. He's a very good striker, active striker, mixes things up well, good kicks, good hands. And then on the ground, he's actually one of the better ground fighters in the UFC middleweight division. This guy just can completely dominate people on the canvas, not just with submissions, but with ground and pound. You saw that in the Machida fight, in the Weidman fight when he won the title. His ground and pound is ferocious. So, you know, if that's the thing is, David Branch's biggest strength is probably the fact that he, you know, can usually get fights to the floor and then utilize his elite level ground game. But I think Luke Rockhold's the better grappler of the two, and he's definitely the more dangerous grappler. Branch is more of a guy that just wears you down a little bit over time and then eventually gets a big takedown and then maybe gets a really late finish. I mean, he's not the guy that's just going to steamroll people. Luke Rockhold steamrolls people. So I think Rockhold gets the better of Branch on the feet, although Branch is talented, and even though he's not the greatest striker, he still makes things happen. I mean, his only loss outside the UFC during a 13-fight stretch was to Anthony Johnson, of all people. He was able to win the World Series of Fighting middleweight title and the light heavyweight title, and he defended them repeatedly. Now, granted, it wasn't against the best competition because most of those guys were in the UFC at the time that were the best, but Branch still was super effective. And then he comes into the UFC, takes on a top 15 guy in Jotko, who's on a big win streak, and he ends up grinding out a close decision over him. So, you know, Branch is effective. He's not the most exciting guy. Like, he's not somebody that Dana White's going to be freaking out about and saying is the next big thing, but Branch has found ways to win. He fights within himself. But the problem is, it's going to be really tough now that he's taking on, you know, the elite of the elite in the middleweight division. Maybe Branch's style could work against somebody like Shotko, but I don't think it's going to work against somebody like a Rockhold or a Jacare or you know, a Musasi, who's not even in the UFC, but just is at that level. So, or a Robert Whittaker. So I'm going to side with Luke Rockhold. I think he's just too talented to let this one slip by. I hope that he's not underestimating Branch, because then Branch might clip him, and Rockhold's chin is his one major liability that has cost him two of his UFC defeats. So I'm going to side with Rockhold anyway, though. I think that he is just too talented to let this one slip, and I expect that he doesn't just win, but he probably finishes Branch along the way. So my pick is going to be Luke Rockhold. So that'll do it for our full event breakdown for UFC Fight Night 116. Now, our premium best for the event will be released this Friday following the weigh-in, so stay tuned for that if you're an MMA Odds Breaker premium member. If we have a free play to give out, make sure to follow at MMAOBPremium on Twitter, because that's where we'll post them first. We can also notify you of our free bets via email alert if you prefer that method. Just send an email to picks@MMAOddsbreaker.com and we'll add you to our free bet mailing list. Special thanks to our sponsor, Five Dimes. Good luck, everyone, and hopefully the betting gods are on your side this weekend.